What up, boy?
What up, my boy?
I'm living, as they say.
Hey, they kept you.
What up, boy? What's up,
bro?
Yeah,
they kept you on to
came with the collar shirt.
Dude, we always.
They kept you on late.
And they told me y'all went to my spot last night. I missed y'all because we went in there.
Yo, we're late.
We always go late. We don't get off till that time.
We sure dropped your name. Charles was here earlier, right? No, I was like, well, yeah, I'm Charles.
No, I got there probably like 1:30.
He's a country boy.
That's the TNT shoes right there.
The TNT shoes.
That's how Shaq came on.
Oh,
the TNT joints.
I got them from him.
Y'all don't believe in socks. Yeah,
I saw Shaq with these, and I had to get me a pair. Get me two pair. I got a black and brown.
You had a lot of input in your Nike shoes?
Yeah, they did. But the main thing, I just wanted my shoes light.
Right.
Because I played a couple games of MJ shoes. Them it was so heavy. I was like,
but he could really jump.
I know he could really jump. I was like, yo, man, how you playing these motherfuckers? Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Get my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On a mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On this vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Get my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On a mission, get me up.
Well, what's up, man? We back on the pivot. It's been some big guests, man. It's been some Hall of Fame type guests, and we gonna keep it going, man. Freaky Freddy, Channing, and we got Hall of Famer Charles
Barkley.
What's up,
man? I saw y'all had the big fella up in here.
Yeah, man. He talk bad about you too, hey, off air.
Man, I love the big fella. We have so much fun. That's the number one thing I'm asked, man. Y'all hate each other? I'm like, man, we just having fun on television. Our moms were like best friends, so I've known Shaq. We got to fighting one time, and they both called us in the locker room after the game and cursed us out. And we went out to dinner that night. I have no idea how his mom and my mom, and there was a third one named Miss Martha, became like best friends. They would take trips together, like all the time. The only thing that was crazy, my mom was spending money like I had Shaq's money. I said, hey, I don't have Shaq's money. I missed that. Because you had sex too soon. I missed that by like 3 or 4 years. And even when my mom was really sick, Shaq's mom came and spent her last couple of days with her. And she spoke at the funeral. But so me and Shaq been together. But man, I love messing with him on television.
But like sometimes when you watch this show, I get uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? Like I do a show with Channing, so I understand. Yeah. Having a co-host who's unprofessional.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like what's that
again?
Having a co-host that's unprofessional. But you know, I watched you one time and y'all were talking about Jay Wright retiring.
Yeah.
And you were messing with Kenny about African American studies. And,
yeah.
You know, you were talking about paying players. Does it ever truly get uncomfortable on the show where y'all kind of got to talk about it afterwards?
Nah. The only time it gets uncomfortable, Shaq is very sensitive. He's very sensitive. We try to explain to him at times, like there is a strategy in basketball. He doesn't understand. He's always been the biggest, baddest MF in the world. So he never had to have a strategy. Like when he played against this guy, this guy, this guy, he's just like, I'm bigger, stronger, faster, I'm better. But like for me and Kenny, like when Kenny's like, well, when I have to play against Gary Payton, I got to play against John Stockton. I have to have two different game plans. So when I play against Karl Malone, you know, Tim Duncan, Kevin McHale, I have to have a different game plan. So he gets mad when we're like, yo, man, there's a strategy to this stuff. Then he starts, well, you ain't won nothing. That's when I know I get him. Because I was like, yeah, man, we can have a basketball strategy conversation. I know I didn't win, but like, there is a strategy out here. But it's funny though, because I always say, like, I can understand he's never had to worry about a strategy, but like, the rest of us got to have a strategy. Like, for you, you can't cover Jerry Rice like you would a Michael Irvin or a Andre Rison. He doesn't understand that. But it's funny, when I love to get him going. But like I said, I know when I got him. When he goes when he starts stuttering, he goes right to the championship. And you know, I'm gonna just throw gasoline on the fire at that point.
Speaking of throwing things, take us back to the night you threw the ball at him.
You know, I pride myself on being a quick thinker. We got tangled up. I pushed him. He pushed me. And then I said, well, there's 20,000 people here. I can't let him do that shit and get away with it. I said, they're going to break the thing up quickly. So I hit him, and then we went at it. But, like, I was thinking about really fast on my feet, because like I say, I'm not gonna fight that big old dude.
Right.
Not unless I got something in my hand or I can get to something. But I was thinking quick, like, they're gonna break it up quickly. As you see, I grabbed him so he couldn't throw hands quickly.
Right.
But it was really, it's just, you know, sometimes you just gotta fight.
I gotta ask you, man, because we talked to a couple other people, basketball dudes. Them dudes ain't built like that. Like, what percentage of the NBA back in your day and now really, really is going to lock up if something happens?
2%. 2%. Hey, we're not built like, you know, one of the things I admire about football players, I played football for one day. And I was like...
One day?
One day. And I was like, yeah, this ain't for me. I played one day, and hey, we used to joke with my coach, he put me on the defensive line, like... If you're on the offensive line or the defensive line, you're a real football player. Mm. I mean, because you're hitting every play.
Yeah.
Like those other positions, you can sneak around and hide a little bit. But if you're on the offensive line, defensive line, you're going to get hit every play. So I tried it. And I was like, yeah, this ain't for me. Because I remember I was exhausted. I had my head down. The coach said, I'll see you tomorrow. I was like, wait, we're not doing this tomorrow. I'm not doing this tomorrow. But that's the reason football and boxing are my two favorite sports, because you have to have something special in here to do that for a living. Like basketball, tennis, golf, very talented. But like to play football or box, you got to be all in and willing to sacrifice your body.
Yeah.
And that I'm just not built like that. And I don't think most basketball players are built like that. Because, you know, I think, not saying they're soft or whatever, like, but the ability to just go out there and get punched in the mouth every day, multiple times. Not many people in the world are built like that, to be honest with you.
I tell you what, though. I'm about to ask a real question, because we've been talking about this light basketball stuff. Channing, you go on Pop Open, the happy dad. You go on grab you one early today.
I bust it.
Yeah, y'all go on bust it over.
But I can't get into the seltzer.
Man, you got to try this, though.
I'll try the seltzer.
So you mentioned a day of football,
yeah,
right? So you in Leeds, Alabama. It's you and your mom.
Yeah.
How does that type of upbringing in Leeds, Alabama prepare you for Philadelphia, Phoenix, Houston?
Nothing can prepare you for Philadelphia. Nothing. Now, you know, Philadelphia is a great city. It's a great sports town. But man, if you're not playing well, it's really not a great place to be. They always have treated me great, but I played with guys they didn't treat good, and it's tough. Growing up, it was my mother, my grandmother, and me and three brothers.
Okay.
And two of my brothers have died, my mother, my grandmother, and my dad. They all gone, so just me and one brother left. But, you know, poor people don't know they're poor, so I didn't realize we were poor until later. But I think the best thing about growing up in my hometown is a couple thousand people. You know, there was really not a lot of opportunity to get into trouble. So, you know, you read on the news where these kids, they're out gang banging and doing stupid stuff. We never even worried about that. Like, we were like, let's just play basketball or let's just hang out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thankful for that aspect of my life. But, man, when I went to Philadelphia, it was a shock to my system. Because I actually, other than a couple SEC schools, I really had never been out of the South. You know, we go to Baton Rouge, we go to Gainesville, we go to Ole Miss, we go to Starkville, we go to Lexington. That's pretty much the extent of my trips until I got out of college. I go to Philly, and man, it was a shock to the system. But I was so lucky that I had Moses, Doc, Maurice Cheeks, Andrew Toney, all those guys, who not only taught me, and Moses is the most important person in my basketball career. Mm. I remember, so I was the number 5 pick in the draft, and I wasn't getting to play. Me and Moses lived in the same building, and I don't want to get a twit that he lived in the pit house. I lived like on the 6th floor. he was Moses.
You had a 1-1?
Yeah. No, he had a penthouse. I was on the 6th floor. And I said, Moses, can I come talk to you tonight? He said, sure. I said, Moses, why am I not getting to play? He says, well, son, you're fat and you're lazy. Because, you know, Ryan, the truth of the matter was, I was, but I was able to get by because I was so talented. Because I played at about 300 pounds in college. And so.
That is the round mound.
Yeah, that was the round mound. That's how I got the name and all those food truck and the big dough, pizza dough boy guy. I mean, I had a bunch of the wide load from Leeds. I mean, I had a lot of nicknames.
That ain't get to you? Like, you ain't tight enough after you started getting nicknames about being fat?
No, because I was playing well. Yeah. I mean, I was in school for 3 years, and I led the SEC in rebounding every year. Mm-hmm. When I got to Auburn, we had never been to the March Madness, and yeah. I got us there in 3 years. So I was having success. You know, and Chan, one of the problems with success is you don't really look at your flaws. You just like, I'm having success. I mean, you're 18 years old. Yeah. You ain't thinking like, hey, I'm like, I must be doing something right. I'm 18 years old. I'm leading SEC and rebounding. Mm-hmm. I led it as a sophomore. I led it as a junior. But I could get by. And when I got to the NBA, you can't get by the NBA. You have to be in shape in pro sports. That's number one thing I tell people. You have to be in shape to play pro sports. And Moses said, hey, if you fat and you're lazy, if you want me to help you, I'll help you. And he said something that changed my life. He says, I don't even know what your playing weight should be, but let's just lose 10 pounds. And this is a guy who's already one of the all-time greats. Started spending time with me before practice, after practice. I lost 10 pounds. I get to 290. He's let's lose 10 more. Mm-hmm. 280, 270, 260, 250. I actually got to 240. But I had no strength and energy. He says,
I bet your head looked big as hell too at 240.
I think my head was shrinking when my gut was shrinking. But no, so I got down to 250. He said, 250 is your weight. And at this point, I'm starting. And I tell people, if he had told me in the beginning I need to lose 50 pounds, that probably would have been overwhelming.
Yeah.
But he said, let's lose 10 pounds. And then, like I say, once I got to 250, I was just killing people, and the rest is history. But if it wasn't for Moses, you know, because I've known guys who've eaten themselves out the league.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to call their names. I'm not trying to embarrass anybody. But there's guys I've known who are eating themselves out of the NBA. But that conversation with Moses changed the whole dynamic of my career.
I saw you quoted somewhere saying your grandmother gave you hell after the game. She criticized you.
My grandmother is the greatest person in my life. She was just amazing, but she used to drive me freaking nuts because she thought she was a player coach. And she'd call me after every game and, you embarrassing me, boy. You had 7 damn rebounds. I'm like, Granny, no, I don't want to hear it. You should never not get double-digit rebounds. That's the thing that got you to the NBA. I need double-digit rebound every damn night. And you got to understand, my grandma's crazy. So growing up, to make money, she sold alcohol on the weekend. So
liquor or rubbing alcohol?
Moonshine?
Just bottles of alcohol and beers. Mm-hmm. So from Friday night to Sunday night, we had like the neighborhood bar. And me and my brothers were kind of like, we was hepping. But she had like a closet with like probably 8 to 10 bottles of alcohol and a refrigerator full of beer. Cause there's really no black bars in my hometown. Yeah, because like I say, and so starting at Friday night at 6 o'clock, guys would start coming over playing cards and drinking, and they wouldn't leave until Sunday night around 6. And it was a fight. Hey, and my grandmother walked around with a six shooter. And she was hilarious now that I think about it.
30, yeah, 30
yeah.
Head on the hip.
Oh yeah. Because let me tell you something. It was a fight every weekend because the guys would come with, they just come straight from cashing their paycheck to gamble and drink and try to make extra money. But you know, once somebody get drunk or they start losing their money, it's gonna be a fight. Yeah. So she always had her gun in a little underwear package. And that was my childhood growing up. And I tell you this funny story. One night, my friends, them damn idiots, talked me into stealing a six pack. And this is how great my grandmother was. So I stuff a six pack in my pants.
Six pack of beer?
Yeah, yeah.
How old?
What kind of pants you had on?
I just stuck them in
the pants he got on right now.
Oh, yeah.
The extra sharp crease.
Yeah. People have been telling me that these grandpa pants, these creases. I said, man, I'm not worried about looking good. I just want to be comfortable.
Comfortable.
So I stick six pack in my pants. And we in the projects, we live kind of like on a little side. And all of a sudden, I get about 20 yards away from the house. And my grandma said, Charles, bring your ass back here. And I said, oh, shit. So I push the beers down. They slide down my leg. And let me tell you something.
It's like one of them loose draws.
hey, Fred.
Them jail boxes.
I'm going to tell you something that's funny. It's like the Lord said, and it's payment. And it's like this angle. And it's like the Lord said, I'm going to make every other sound in the world stop. It's going to be quiet. Ain't no other. Man, you can hear those beers rolling down there. And I was like, damn, I'm cooked. I mean, you could, like, it's like there was no other. The Lord said, there's going to be no other sound in the world right now. And all you can hear is beers rolling down the pavement. But this, I'm going to tell you how cool my grandmother was. My grandmother says, hey, I'm not going to embarrass you in front of your friends, but I'm going to beat the hell out of you when you get back home. That's still to this day the best cup of beers I've ever had in my life.
Hey, them beers came with a price. Hey, those were some Shawshank Redemption beers.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, those are the best two beers. But that's how great my grandmother was, man. She says, hey, I need 10 rebounds a night minimum. In high school, in college, and in the NBA. I told the worst decision I ever made when I put that damn big old dish in the backyard. I thought I was done with her after college, because she came to every home game, her and my mom, and she, like, she get the stat sheet before the coach did. She was that crazy. But the thing that was funny about it, that's one of the big old dishes that first came out.
Yeah.
And, man, I made the mistake of buying her one, and she started harassing me. And she be calling me with trade opportunities. Hey, you need to. Hey, tell the coach he needs to get rid of number 12. And I'm like, I'm like, Granny, you're not a general manager. You're not a general manager. I mean, but she be critiquing the hell out of me. It was hilarious.
So the big fella mentioned his father being his biggest influence.
Yeah.
Would you say your grandmother is the voice you heard in back of your head?
Yeah, you know,
most nights.
My grandmother was amazing because she worked in a meat factory during the day, and on the weekends she was a cosmetologist. So she was a hard-working woman. She demanded hard work out of everybody. She was a no BS person. I feel like I've always had a great work ethic is because of her. But like, what I tell you is funny, she used to bring chicken feet home. And you know, if you've ever seen the chicken feet, it's only like, it's this, but it's like, this is the only meat, this little piece right here. So you have to eat like 100 to get like a full meal. And it was hilarious, but thinking about those growing up. Mm-hmm. But she was just an amazing person.
Right. But you talk about your grandmother, man. You're very outspoken.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because every time I hear that, I'm like.
No, but the question really is, I wanted to ask you, or is it more that you're opinionated, or does it tread along the lines of being controversial?
Well, you know, it has something to do with race, to be honest with you, because I hear that all the time. I'm like, wait, I don't think I'm saying things I don't hear other people say.
Right.
But I think they throw those code words, outspoken, opinionated, when they're talking about brothers on television. Because mm-hmm. I think some of the white guys say some of the exact same thing that I say, and they're considered experts. And I'm like, whoa, hold on a second now. Why do you call me controversial, outspoken? I'm saying the same thing that these other guys are saying. But to me, they use those code words when they're saying stuff like that. And that always makes me laugh. I says, I don't think I'm controversial. Like I say, I saw somebody say exactly what I said yesterday, today, but you throw those code words at me. But I just laugh about it, because I'm gonna be a straight shooter. That's what's really important. I think television is so powerful. One of my mentors is Mike Wilbon, and we talk about it all the time. He's like a big brother to me. He says, man, television is powerful. When he first got the job at PTI, because he was talking about, man, I've been writing for the Washington Post for 25 years, and nobody know who the hell I am. I'm on TV for 6 months. I can't go to dinner without people want to take pictures and autograph.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I said, man, TV is so powerful. But the problem with television is we got so many guys on television who are full of shit. Like, I found out this when I was in Philadelphia. That's how long ago it was. A lot of guys, and they're friends of mine, we'd be playing golf, and I'd say, what are you going to talk about today on the radio? They're like, blah, 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 blah. I says, wait, you going to talk about that? You don't believe it? He says, no, I don't believe that. But, Charles, these fools going to call in and argue with me for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? He said, Charles, we're trying to get viewers. We ain't. And I said, so when I got my job, I said, I want to always be authentic and truthful, because if I say something, I want people to, even if they disagree, because I don't think I'm right all the time, but ain't nobody going to be able to say, Charles said this to get clicks or whatever. I'm never going to do that, especially being a brother, because it's going to be few and far between for us. So we have to really handle our business.
And with that standpoint, like, because we were talking to the big man, we were talking to Shaq.
Yeah.
And I say stuff all the time, get me in, and I said trouble.
Yeah.
He was like, what is trouble? He was like, did you lose your job? Did you get fired? Did you lose money? Did your wife leave you? And I was like, no. He's like, so what's trouble? In your mind, with you being controversial or whatever the words they use when a black man speaks his mind,
yeah,
what's that threshold? Like, where is that threshold hit where you know you can't go past that?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know that yet, because I don't worry about that. Like, if I say something that I want to say, I'm willing to take all the heat and smoke for it. I always have a plan. Yeah. Like people say, well, Charles will say anything. I said, well, first of all, I always got a plan. Because if there's something that I want to have a conversation about, I'll throw gasoline on the fire and get people talking about it. Mm. So, because I think our job is to make people think. I do. When I want people to think for themselves. I mean, especially when it's a serious issue. Don't just stick with your own tribe and don't try to be a right fighter. I want you to think about what you think about it. And then we can have an honest, fair conversation. That's all I try to do. I mean, because like I said, I don't think I'm right all the time. But with the platform that I have, I'm like, I want people to think and talk. And then at the end of the day, if we said we disagree, I'm cool with that.
One thing I always tell people too, country dumb. I'm from the Bible Belt. I'm from Atlanta. Yeah. You from Alabama. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And you have a certain accent, and people mess with you about how you say words. People mess with me all the time, how country I am. That country dumb side of it, I believe that when people underestimate you because of your dialect, because of your twang and your voice, that you have the advantage on them. Because they already think you're unintelligent.
Well,
because you talk like you're from the South.
Well, I always tell them this. You know all those smart people? Well, they're working for me. So I don't want to hear that how smart they are. They work for me.
Yeah.
They can be all smart they want to. I don't have a college degree, but I got a lot of people working for me, got them. I think it's an insult to people when you try to think you're smarter than they are, because they might be better at something than you. Like, am I a lawyer? No. Am I a doctor? No. But they can't diagram a play. They don't know what a cover two is, a zero blitz, and things like that you guys know. I mean, you just have to be good at what you're good at. Mm-hmm. Like, if they sit, I guarantee you, you sit me down with a doctor or a lawyer, I says, what's this, what they do? What's that defense they're running? What did he just do on that pick and roll? They're gonna be like, I don't know. But these sick men in the operating room, I don't know what the hell they're doing. I never underestimate somebody's smartness. Like, I don't know how to fix shit around the house. But I can make a phone call and get somebody over there. But I don't know. Like, yo, man, I can get you some rebounds, but I don't know how to fix stuff. So I think just because you a carpenter, electrician, plumber, that don't mean you're dumb. That means you're better at that skill, that mindset.
That skill set.
But, yeah, but like I say, I always laugh when people get new stuff for Christmas. And they're like, we need to put this together. I said, no, we're going to get somebody to put that shit. I'm not gonna mess around and get somebody killed putting something together. I said, no, we're gonna get somebody to put that together.
You don't do nothing?
No.
Light
nothing.
Bulbs.
I know I changed a light bulb.
When you get on the ladder and get the tall, I know your house got damn 15-foot ceilings. You get up there?
No, I don't do that.
You hire somebody?
Yeah.
Why on the ladder?
I don't wanna get hurt, man.
I
don't wanna get hurt.
You mentioned earlier that you think race sometimes comes into play with the way that analysts or anybody who has a voice gets an opportunity to speak on TV, the way that they're spoken about, or even when we're talking about athletes.
Yes.
When in hockey, you can fight all the damn time, and it's cool, but if a basketball player starts to push and he has tattoos and he's black with cornrows, he's a thug.
Yes.
But also, too, at least I feel in our positions that we have, race plays a part in our responsibility. Right. And I think our community gravitates towards us because of that. And so there was something that you did around the killing of Breonna Taylor. That yes. You took a lot of heat from yes. our community because you said it was different than a George Floyd
yes.
situation. How do, when you look back on that, how would you have handled that situation differently?
Not at all. Number one, it's a shame that she got killed. That was really sad and unfortunate. The point I was trying to make, her boyfriend did shoot the cops. I says, wait a minute. Number one, I'm sorry the young lady got killed, but you can't compare that to the murder of George Floyd. Those are two different animals. I think that's the problem what we have being black on television. See, black people think we have to agree with them all the time. I said, wait a minute, I'm not gonna agree with you all the time. And if you get mad, you just get mad. I think that I'm able to sit back, make a conscientious, smart, objective. Like I say, that like kneeling on a man for 9 minutes, that ain't the same as the police coming, knocking on your door and your boyfriend shoot at the cops. And it was really unfortunate, but I don't think you can compare the two. And that was only the point I was trying to make. We can argue and debate right, wrong, but it was wrong that she got killed. But I said, you can't equate those two things. But I don't do social media. Mm-hmm. I hear about it
right.
from my family and friends. And I realized there was a certain faction of the black community that went crazy on me. But there was also a certain faction that came to my defense and who came up to me on the street and said, hey, you had a point. And like I say, man, I have tried. We need policemen. See, this is what frustrates me. You have these idiots and fools talking about defund the police and everything. We as black people, we need the police. Now, when they screw up, they need to be held accountable.
We also need them to be better as
but
well.
They don't know. They need to be held accountable yes. when they screw up. Because I tell you this, Ryan, who are black people supposed to call when we got crimes in our neighborhood? Ghostbusters?
I wasn't trying to laugh right
now. No, seriously, I said that.
I don't know if that little thing they kick out with the little light going to do it.
That ain't going to do it. Because let me tell you, you know who always going to have cops? White folks mm-hmm. in good neighborhoods. They always going to have cops. And for us to get out here, like I say, they need to do better. And we need to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
One thing that really frustrates me, I never understand why black folks don't get mad when we kill each other. But like when a white cop kills a black kid, first of all, white folks come out. And I always say, well, why don't white folks come out when black folks kill each other? I guess it's like the popular thing to do to be seen on television marching with the black folks. But when black folks kill each other, they don't come out and march with us.
Well, I think the first thing is this though, is that one, if you don't believe that people in our communities are upset when we're killing each other, I think that's a ridiculous notion to not believe that they aren't upset, because they are. But the other piece of it is, too, is one, there have been some white people that have marched. It has now gotten popular. I think the other piece of marching when it's authority figures killing young black men or killing black women is the fact that that's a difference in equality. Like, that's a difference in treatment. What we do to one another absolutely needs to be policed. It absolutely needs to be eradicated. It needs to be something that we march against. But the reason that people march when a cop, whether it's a white cop or with any cop, kills an unarmed black man is because the thought is you wouldn't kill an unarmed white man mm-hmm. or you would treat them differently. That's about equity. That's about equality. That's about making sure that everyone has the same opportunities here to succeed. It's in no way something to say that black people killing black people doesn't matter. We're also the only race in the world that has a crime that's called black on black crime. We don't say nothing about Asian on Asian crime. White people kill each other all the damn time. We don't say nothing about white on white crime. And so I do think there's power in the way we speak of things. I do get it, but I do think that because we have a voice, I think it's good that you say you like to light a fire and have people have conversations.
Yes.
That's good, but that conversation has to come with solution. And I think that's where we are lacking.
I think that the reason we talk about black on black crime and not white on white crime, because we're killing each other at a much faster rate, And then to piggyback on one of your other points, the cops actually have shot more white people than black people.
Because there's more of them, Charles.
I know that, but I'm saying, why don't the media cover that? The media, that's what one of my concerns are with the media. Are they with us, against us? Because when the cops shoot white people, they never cover that. When a white cop kills a black kid, it's going right to CNN. They're going to send a crew there. But, and these are all the things I like to talk about because I think they are really important. They're really important.
Ahmaud Arbery.
Yes.
Who's the white him? George Floyd. Is there a white him?
Philando Castile.
Yeah. There's not. Are you saying there are white people in that same situation? George Floyd. Like, is there a white George Floyd that didn't get on video? Because I don't think so.
No, I was just talking about cops shooting people.
No, I'm saying just the cop, like police brutality.
It's real. It's very real.
And every you played against people that are trash. There's terrible teachers. There's terrible attorneys. Yep. There's terrible everything. But why do I not hear the stories about the Philando Castile? And I saw a video of that. Why, George Floyd. I haven't seen a white man get a cop to sit on his neck.
Long enough to kill him. You're 100% correct. And all I'm saying is when these cops screw up, we need to make them pay. And the cops have to do a better job of policing each other. They have to do a much better job of policing each other.
Yeah.
Because we can't have that code silence, blue code, whatever, the blue shield, because they're putting each other in danger also. I mean, they're putting each other in danger. But we need to address the whole crime wave that's taking over our country because this stuff is getting out of hand. I don't know the solution, but we all got to do better, plain and simple.
Well, when they took away the right back in the day, censorship and music, things got a lot worse because people were able to say whatever they want. It's freedom of speech. I get that and understand it. But the more people talk about certain things, the more followers and, you know, people are going to emulate that. Yeah. Same thing today with social media. You can go into Instagram and all these other different social media platforms, and you can see somebody get shot. So when you talk about more crime, people are seeing it every day. So it's like they're numb to it. You know, if we see that, we don't say, oh, we got to figure out a way to stop. Like, oh, in a month or two, you're going to forget about it. It's going to happen again. Yeah. Just keep on moving forward. So I think that these companies, they need to find a way to regulate social media. Because kids get on there, they see any and everything. If the parents aren't paying attention, and that takes me back to one of your iconic commercials, I am not a role model, and people took that, you know, in the wrong way, where parents should parent. And I think more of that is needed today, especially when it comes to social media.
A couple of things you touched on. First of all, you know I do no social media, so I think those people are f***ing idiots. That's just me. I've been offered millions of dollars to do social media. I'm like, not a chance in the world. Because number one, I don't want those people having access to me. Because I never understand what kind of loser has to make a comment on something. Like, when I'm living my life, trying to be successful and do my thing, I never like, well, let me comment on this and say something rude or asinine. Like, so, and I was like, well, why would I want to talk to those people? And I'm pretty sure a lot of them are really good people, but I don't want to expose myself to the idiots and the fools and the jackasses, so I will never do social media. The second part, so I was concerned about black kids when I would go speak at schools. So I went to Nike, I think it was 1989, I said, I'm concerned about these black kids. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, I think they can only be jocks and entertainers.
That was your Sports Illustrated cover.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I says, I don't think they can be doctors, lawyers, engineers, teachers, firemen, police, and things like that. And Nike says, I don't think that's a good idea. I says, let me tell you something. It's not a good idea. It's a f***ing great idea. And I said, I want to make this commercial. They're like, hey, you do it, we'll do it. So I did it. And what's really cool, Nike came to me like a year later and says, hey, we got to tell you, we were 100% wrong. Like 90% of our letters supported you. But what's interesting about it, so when you're in the NBA, you go speak at a lot of schools. And we have a lot of segregated schools in this country. So what was frustrating to me when I would go to the white schools, I always say, well, what do you want to do? And they would say, well, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a teacher, engineer, blah, blah, blah. But when I was going to the black schools, I was like, well, I want to play in the NBA. I want to play in the NFL. I'm like, oh. I said, I think these kids are brainwashed thinking they can only play sports. So that goes back to the fire I was starting about. I knew when the commercial first came out, the media, which they're jackasses, they were gonna jump on me.
Charles, you part of the media.
Yeah, but I never. Yeah, I know. Yeah, hey,
this is the first thing I thought. Hey,
but I really feel like I'm a good part of the media because I don't have a hidden agenda.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example one time. So I'm playing for the 76ers, and my coach is Paul Westfall, and he says to me, "Hey, because it's my team. I'm the leader." He says, "I'm gonna bring in a friend on the plane. If there's anything happen, I need you to handle it." And I said, "Coach, I got your back." So we're in the back of the plane playing cards, and then I forget who it was. Says, "Oh hell no!" I said, "What's going on?" He says, "Rush Limbaugh's in this motherfucker." And I said, "What?" And so they look at me like, "You need to go talk to that motherfucker." And I was like, "Ugh, all right, it's my team. I'm the leader." So I go up there. I said, "Rush, the brothers, we're a little unhappy, so I need to talk to you." I said, "I'm not going to be confrontational. I want you to explain yourself, blah, 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 blah." And we ended up talking, and actually became cordial. And he said to me, he says, "Charles, I don't believe half the shit I say on radio or TV." He says, "It's all a scheme, it's all a game." Mm-hmm. And I started thinking back, going back to Philadelphia when they told me, like, "Yo, man, our job is to get y'all to call in and argue on the radio for 4 hours." Mm-hmm. And when Rush said that to me, he said, "Yeah, man, I'm just playing a character on television."
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, so we're all part of a game that we don't even know we're in.
Yeah.
Because let's get one thing. The Democrats and the Republicans are both full of shit. And they said that you got to pick a team. You got to pick a team. But what does the team actually do for you? Absolutely nothing. I voted Democratic my entire life. My entire life. And I'm starting to think like, man, everybody in my hometown is still poor.
Yeah.
Man, all the black neighborhoods are still poor. They all go to schools. And we've been voted Democratic for 59 years. I've been on the earth. And then I was like, at least the Republicans, they just gonna take care of the rich folks. I think the point I try to tell people now, man, if you waiting on these political parties to make your life better, you just wrong.
So what do you do though?
You got to handle your own business, Chan. You got to handle your own business. Like, you can't sit around and say, "Hey, I want this party." You have to take control of your life. Mm-hmm. You have to work your ass off to put yourself in a position to be successful. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting around waiting on one of these parties to take care of you, you're in trouble. So I want young black kids, don't think about being in the NFL or being in the NBA. First of all, I wish everybody could, because you guys know it's a great life. But most people, as I say, have to get a real job. You know, I want us to have black doctors, lawyers, engineers, teachers, plumbers, electricians, carpenters. And we really need them to start adopting those fields, because if you're putting all your eggs in an NFL or NBA basket, you're sadly gonna be mistaken.
Right.
Like I said, I wish everybody could play in the NFL or the NBA, but it's really an unrealistic goal.
Even with your that commercial, "I am not a role model," I think it makes perfect sense that the parents need to step up. Chan even says, looking at the black community itself, you know, you have parents that are, quote Channing, deadbeat parents, because they're trying to live through their children, you know, the dream that they missed out on in sports. And even to this day, man, when I go and speak to schools, you know, obviously that you're going in for career day or whatever it might be, you know, the kids are saying the same thing that, you know, you said back in the day, "I want to be this athlete."
Yeah.
And that's okay. But make sure you get that everything else is intact. Make sure, you know, that the parents are saying, "We're gonna make sure school is good first."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People ask me, "Fred, why don't your boys play ball?" I don't give a damn if they play ball. If they wanted to, that's fine. But what I'm gonna do as a parent, I'm gonna make sure that they're able to compete with that little white kid that's sitting over there.
Yeah.
They're gonna be just as smart as him, because I'm gonna provide all those different resources. But it's just unfortunate, right?
Yeah, we've been brainwashed. But
we have to continue, especially using this platform where it's just open source, we have to continue to sort of push that, you know, that narrative, because it's more than sports.
Yeah,
your quote in that commercial, man, I think they should actually replay that.
Well, thank you.
Now.
You know, so it's interesting. I bought a distillery in Alabama about 3 years ago. I got a vodka and a gin. And people said, why'd you buy that business? I said, well,
see, okay, you can't empty hands.
You didn't tell me.
So about a drink.
So the reason I bought the distillery, so I've been trying to give my goal is to give $1 million a year away to charity. So the first year I did my high school, the second year I did my college, Auburn, shout out to Auburn, War Eagle. The third year I did Wounded Warriors. Mm-hmm. And the last 5 years I've did 5 historically black colleges. 2 here in Atlanta, Morehouse and Clark, and 3 in Alabama, Tuskegee, Miles, and Alabama A&M. And when I go speak to those kids, we never talk about sports. I said, guys, we're never gonna talk about sports. I want y'all to be doctors, lawyers, engineers, things like that. I says, we have been brainwashed by the system because the only black people they see are famous blacks who are great at sports or
entertainment.
Mm-hmm. I said, y'all do know we got black doctors and lawyers and engineers and teachers and things like that. So that's, and I love your point. We gotta be better parents. Like my daughter, I think she used to hate me because I was like, hey, I'm getting your ass ready for the world. I want you to be the strongest, most beautiful, smart black woman in the world. And I said, I don't want them to ever say you got a job because you're Charles Barkley's daughter. You're gonna have to be harder. And I don't want to hear about the double standard. Every black person knows there's a double standard. You don't get to screw up and say there's a double standard. So I said, you're gonna read every day for a half an hour. I don't care what you read. And I remember the first time we celebrated MLK Day in Arizona, because they came late to the party. And I says, you know who Dr. Martin Luther King is? She said, yeah. I says, well, what do you know about him? I said, well, he did a lot of great things for black people, blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, hell no. I said, you ain't gonna get no day off. And I says, you write me a damn report on his birthday, on his holiday every year. Tell me something different. You ain't gonna get to use the same paper. And I said, I want her to know about him, Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, Bill Russell, Nelson Mandela. I always wanted her to know about people who put all of us in a position to be successful, because I think it's really, really important to know your past. Because I tell people, man, as a black person today, we ain't really been through no shit. Like, I can't imagine what it's like Bill Russell, Ali, and those guys. I can't even imagine the shit that they had to go through. Like, yeah, I'm from Alabama. I've been called a few times. I'm like, hey, hello. Like, okay, don't be real.
You can't say hello.
Hey, that's me.
No, I'm just saying, like, that ain't no big deal to me.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in Alabama, I've seen some stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, I ain't really been through no, like, some stuff that the older brothers had to go through.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, ain't nobody ever said, Charles, you can't stay at my hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You can't eat where you want to. So I think it's important for us to celebrate those guys.
I push back and say that's why you are a role model. So you're talking about Jackie Robinson, where
yes.
He couldn't even stay.
Yeah.
He couldn't eat with his teammates
yeah.
and all. And that's why, and I understand the message you were portraying when I'm not a role model.
Yeah.
But you look like me. You're successful, the world loves you. So you can't decide if you're a role model or you're not a role model.
You are a role model
because you put yourself with talent, in the situation you're in. You are a role model.
Well, my thing is, though, I would just, thank you, number one. But my job is to poke the bear. Mm-hmm. But I want to use my power in a really good way. Like, I love writing a check for $1 million to a historically black college. I know so many kids gonna go to college. It's a really good feeling. You know, I love, in my high school, a lot of those black kids can't go to college without my help. Mm-hmm. And in my scholarship at Auburn, their number one job is to recruit black students. So we need to get the black student population up at Auburn. You know, we have close to 30,000 students. And I think we got like 1 to 2% of black students. So damn. I want that to be closer to 10%. And that's why I give the money to recruit black kids. But I need this platform to do what I want to do. Because you can have all the good intentions you want, but black people need economic opportunity. You know, that's what they need. And that's my number one objective, is give them economic opportunity. And that comes with education. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important thing for me.
We're in an environment, you know, you're not on social media, but we're in an environment where you have the influencers. I know we had a few conversations some months back talking about influencers, like what is an influencer? But truth be told, you know, we talk about doctors, lawyers, all this other different stuff. Influencers, they are making in a year or two a lot more money than doctors and lawyers are making in a lifetime. But a lot of people don't know that. Much like a lot of people don't know that, I want to go back to 1992, the Dream Team, that you were considered the leader, the MVP, and the anchor of that team, but you didn't get all of the notoriety. Well, did you feel
who
some
said
type?
That?
Well, Magic Johnson said.
You know, Michael Jordan was the leader.
Magic
of that team.
Johnson.
Come on now.
Chuck Daly said Barkley brought the most intensity and fire each and every day, each and every game, and even Magic said Charles Barkley was the MVP. So my question is,
and the
is,
better players were not Charles Barkley.
My point is this. With that being said, Mike got the notoriety, Bird got the notoriety, and Magic got the notoriety. Did you feel some type of way?
No, I'm gonna tell you why, Fred. Number one, okay, let me tell you something.
Chuck Daly
said to me, he said, "Charles, can I talk to you a second?" I said, "Yeah, Chuck, anything." He says, "You're the second best basketball player in the world." I said, "Who bet me?" He says, "That motherfucker right there." I says, "You're right about that." I says, "But thank you." And I said, and I've said this many times, that's the best compliment I've ever gotten from somebody. I said, "I actually agree with you." I said, "But you know what? I'm gonna put an end to that next year." I said, "We're playing them motherfuckers in the finals." Yeah. And I'm gonna bring it. I said,
Phoenix.
The next year I'm going to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And I said, I got Dan Marley, Kevin Johnson. I said, "We're going to the fucking finals." And when I got to Phoenix, I told those guys the first day, I said, "Guys, we're going to the finals. We're gonna play that motherfucker from Chicago." I said, "I'm sick of people telling me he's betting me. I just didn't have no help in Philly."
Yeah.
And I says, "We're gonna play them in the championship." And we got there and they beat it. And that was the first time I ever said in my life, "Damn, I think there's somebody better than me at basketball."
That was the first time in your life?
In my whole life. Because I said, Magic was great, but he had Worthy and Kareem.
Yeah.
I had Manute Bol and Shelton Johnson. Of course he's gonna be better. Bird had Mikal and Parrish. But I said, like, no, these dudes ain't better than me, they just got more help. But when Chuck gave me that compliment, it meant a great deal to me. But to get back to your point, you know, Fred, the reason I wasn't upset, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird are the two most important figures in NBA history. They saved the NBA. Because people act like not guys are making $30, $40, $50 million. When I got to the NBA, the average salary was $200,000, $250,000. Wow. And then Magic and Bird came. And they had the greatest rivalry in NBA history. They had racial undertones. Yep. But the thing I admire about them too, them brothers just basketball junkies, Magic and Bird. So when they came to the NBA, stuff started to take off. And then Michael came in and took it to a whole nother level. So I thank those guys for making sure I never had to have a job. I didn't mind them getting shine at all because, like I say, you know, if you're gonna look at golf, you would say Jack and Arnold were amazing. Jack Nicklaus is one of the greatest people I've ever met in my life. I only met Arnold one time, but I love Jack Nicklaus because every time I see him, he's just a perfect gentleman. And then you got Tiger, who, like, him and Mike are like once in a lifetime guys.
Right.
But I did not get upset at those three guys because they made the NBA. No disrespect to anybody who came along past it. The only thing I feel bad about is, you know, guys like Russell, you know, Dr. J, most of those guys were the foundation, but we were all born at the right time. I mean, I know I'm not as good as Bill Russell. Bill Russell made $2,000, and I was making $3 or $4 million just because I was born at the right time. And not only just because of the basketball and the money and, you know, Michael bought the shoes. You know, people forget, man, wasn't nobody doing commercials before Michael?
Yeah.
Now everybody does commercials. I mean, Michael did two things where I always tell people why I think he's the GOAT. Number one, the shoe thing. Nobody was making money before shoes before Michael. Now guys all making $300-400 million a year because of Michael. Well, a couple guys are making that much, but that's because of Michael. And then secondly, we all got commercials. Nobody made commercials before Michael Jordan came along. So Magic, Bird, and Michael, to me, man, I think those guys, for me, never had to get a real job. It means a lot to me, those three guys.
So I think the crazy part is you're talking about your career. You almost seem more famous now in your second stint. I mean, we had Ric Flair on here, and he couldn't help but talk about how much he loved Charles Barkley, and that's my friend, and all of these things. And where are you now in retirement? Because you say you're not going to die on TV next to Shaq. Right? And what are your plans now?
You're going to die on TV next to Shaq.
Yeah. No, you know
that's what's going to happen, y'all. You're going to die right there on TV. On the set.
I got 2 years left on my contract, and I think that's going to be it for me. You know, man, I've been doing this for 21 years. I'll be 61 when my contract ends. Shout out to little Henry. I just had my first grandbaby. My daughter and her husband are wonderful. My daughter's a great person. She's a really nice person. My son-in-law is a great person. Man, holding that little dude was one of the coolest experiences of my life. I mean, it meant a great deal to me to see her become a mom. But I just feel the need. I'm smarter, man. I'm going to die sooner than later. And I wanted to, not that I haven't enjoyed my life. I had the most amazing life a person could have. But I wanted just go play golf and fish and travel the world. And listen, if I ain't got enough money by now, I'm an idiot anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because I played 16 years in the NBA. I've been on television for 21 years as we tape this. But like, man, I'm 60 years old. Like, I'm closer to the end than the beginning.
Right.
So do you want to work or you want to travel and have fun and don't have nothing to do? I mean, and that's the way I'm leaning. But I got 2 years before I have to make a decision.
But to that point, you 59 now, you're going to be 60.
Yes.
You ain't got no woman. You ain't, does the man still work?
I knew it was coming, dog.
You still stroking, Chuck?
Man, I've been married for 34 years. Mm-hmm. And I have learned a lot.
Positions?
I wish I could have been a better husband.
Yeah.
I wish I could have been a better father. There's a lot of give and takes in this, in fame. Mm-hmm. Fame is hard, man. As far as like, you always got something to do.
Yeah.
When you're playing, you really got stuff to do. And now I really got stuff to do because I'm traveling all the time. And that's one of the reasons. Like, I get on the plane twice a week to fly. And I'm like, man, how much longer do you want to get on this plane every week at 6 o'clock in the morning? So I'm just at a point in my life, I'm like, yo, man, enjoy it. Because people talk to me about the championship and things like that. I always laugh. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second. You want me, first of all, I want to win the championship. But I'm trying to figure, just because a couple of assholes on television say, well, he never won a championship. I'm like, wait, when did it become an individual thing? Mm-hmm. It makes a good soundbite on television, but I didn't realize I was playing golf and tennis. Yeah. You know, like, and I don't want to poo-poo on anybody's parade, but like, let's take Matthew Stafford. He's been a good quarterback in Detroit for 12 years, I think. And then he goes to a really good team and wins the Super Bowl. And I'm like, yay, if I could have went to a real good team, I would have won the championship too.
And if Michael Jordan was gone.
No, I got my shot at him. Listen, I met him at the OK Corral. I was good with that. And then I had another couple chances.
It wasn't OK Corral for you.
I was the guy who got killed at the OK Corral. But, you know, listen, man, all you want to do is say, I got my shot.
Yeah.
You know, I got my shot. And that's all you can ask for. But, like, this notion that when some guys say, well, you didn't win a championship, I'm like, yeah, it's not a, you know, it's not an individual thing.
Yeah.
But, man, I gave it all I had. I mean, I did the best that I could. And I sleep good at night about what I accomplished in sports because nobody thought I was going to be any good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the shit that makes me laugh. Like, when I was coming out of high school, I had like 5 letters. I don't even think nobody out of the state of Alabama wanted me. I mean, I tell you, we always joke around, like Shaq and Kenny were both McDonald's All-Americans. Right. I said, well, why I ate at McDonald's? That's the closest I came. Like, I think coming out of high school, I was the number 5 ranked player in the state. In the whole state. And first of all, I was clearly I had better careers than any of those other guys. Wow. But I got penalized because I was in a small town. But nobody was recruiting me but the schools in Alabama. And then when I got to the NBA, they're like, well, he's only a 6'5 power forward. He'll never be successful. And then 11 All-Star games later, I think I see that stat. It's only 3 guys in the history of basketball that's got 20,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 4,000 assists. Man, I'm happy with my career. I was blessed to play for 16 years. So I got no complaints about my life.
Yeah, you were the mound, round, rebound,
and Doughboy. But
I was asking about if you was the mound, round, mound, round, tearing the coochie up.
He's trying to pivot back to that question because you ducked the question.
You ducked the question, Chuck.
Yeah, you ducked the question.
Better enjoy them 7 minutes, brother. That's all I can tell you.
Man, we appreciate you, man. No problem. Thank you so much.
Enjoy them 7 minutes, brother.
Hey, he got more.
7 minutes, that's all I got. It's going to be a hard, aggressive 7 minutes.
You're
the only 6'4 rebound champ on the planet, ever.
Yeah, that's one of my, the shortest guy to lead to the league in rebounds, one of my, it's one of my coolest. You know, I tell people, when I look at some of my things, I say, this is getting my high school had never made it to the state tournament. That was a big deal for me. My college had never made it to March Madness. Getting them there for the first time was a big deal to me. And then in the NBA, I think, listen, representing your country twice in the Olympics, it's a great accomplishment. But I always tell somebody, I was actually talking to Keo Spikes the other day, him and Tutan Reyes, and we were talking about if you can play a professional sport for 10 years, you had a great life and career. If you can get to double digits, because the average career in all pro sports is like 4 years. It's like 4 years. I said, man, I played for 16 years. I mean, I had 14 good years and 2 hang-ons, but I got no complaints.
We got no complaints either, brother. Yeah. Man, we appreciate you.
No problem, my brother.
Duck, appreciate you, baby.
Oh, of course, yes, Fred, my pleasure. Limitless, biggest stomach cap pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On the mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless, biggest stomach cap pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling,